News Radio 690 KTSM presents the second hour of the El Paso History Show with documentary filmmaker Jackson Polk and historian Melissa Sargent, streaming live at ktsmradio.com. Brought to you by Patrick Tuttle Legacy Real Estate Services, 915-585-7777. And by Amigos Restaurant, 2000 Montana, a block east of Cotton, open 7 days a week with great Mexican food. By Keystone Heritage Park on Donovan Drive, 915-584-0563. By Monterey Asset Management. And by Mission Del Rey, 1421 Lee Trevino, with El Paso souvenirs and gift shopping. And now, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
Ready? Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Am
you
I ready?
Are we here?
Testing.
Are we on
here? It's that kind of thing where we do the second hour of the El Paso Mystery Radio Show. And if I find the page, I'll read you what it says on there.
Because,
it's down the road.
It's about the history of how El Paso got its name and its time.
That's right.
That's right. And part of the reason the train is around, too.
And so you wrote this for the El Paso History Alliance, which is a big crowd we'll talk about in a minute. But this is something you do every week at this time. And we start now with our history moment is about how El Paso got its name.
When Mexico won its independence from Spain in 1821, the El Paso area and what is now the American Southwest became part of the Mexican nation. The Municipal Council of El Paso del Norte granted land north of the Rio Grande to Juan Maria Ponce de Leon, and it became a thriving agricultural and ranching enterprise. The Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo of February 2, 1848, fixed the boundary between the two nations at the deepest portions of the Rio Grande. Thus, El Paso del Norte, the future Ciudad Juarez, became a border town. By late 1849, aided by the gold rush to California, five settlements had been established by Anglo-Americans north of the river. One of them, known as Franklin, was the ranch of former proprietor Ponce de Leon. In 1859, however, pioneer Anson Mills named this settlement El Paso, thus generating considerable confusion that lasted for almost 30 years. On September 16, 1888, El Paso del Norte was renamed Ciudad Juarez after Mexican hero and former president Benito Juarez. And thus the historic name El Paso became the sole possession of the bustling little railroad town at the western tip of Texas.
More history next week on El Paso History Moments. I'm Melissa Sargent for the El Paso History Alliance.
You're aligned with these people, are you?
I think so. Somehow I'm aligned with them. At least I'm married to the man. No, the El Paso Historical Alliance is a great organization. And you've got Max Grossman out there. He put the Facebook page together, and it's got great pictures and history and up-to-date information on what's happening on historical situations here in El Paso and Texas. And Bernie also is involved. And if you have a question or you're interested in getting involved in history, give him a call at 581-7920. And also I want to point out the other pages that do some great jobs on Facebook are Remember an El Paso Win with Barbara Givenmake Bainey and her crew and cast over there. They're doing a great job of putting up pictures and stories.
Yeah, tons of archives.
Oh, wonderful stuff.
You want to see anything about El Paso history, they basically have it in there. Just search their archives. And they have another administrator who works with them, Margaret D. Smith.
Oh,
who happens to be a great niece of a Trost.
She's very hysterical.
A lot of people live in a Trost house, but she is a Trost.
Yes, we were talking to her this week.
So she's a good people. And then an interesting crowd over there, a new moderator named Ron Tabor. And that's a good crowd of people, so we appreciate what they do. All right, shall we talk more trains here?
Let's talk choo-choo trains.
We got choo-choo trains. We got Woody Bears on the line still, and we're going to add this time Patricia Kidney. Hey, Patricia, good morning.
Hey, good morning, everyone.
Speaking of loose caboose.
Wait a minute now. That was not on the script. I got news for you. No, that's only when you're a shady lady, right?
Well, okay.
Oh, goodness, I have not been called that before.
Well, always something new for you, Patricia.
Now's your moment. Hey, Woody, you still with us?
Yes.
Okay, Woody.
I'm still here.
We're talking about the trains that came into El Paso. Give us again the rundown, 1881 to 18-whatever. How many train lines showed up?
Eight train lines in 1915, and it was quite a bit.
That's a lot.
$3 million payroll at that time a year just from the railroads in El Paso.
That's a lot of people. So what I wanted to ask Patricia about in this hour was what kind of cultural changes occurred? Because, I mean, we're talking freight, we're talking numbers of trains, a lot of train lines and all that. But the people that showed up, how did El Paso change when the train showed up, Patricia?
Well, I'm always interested in why people move around, you know, what takes them and to these different places. And so in looking at this, I was really thrilled as I did my research to find all these different little snippets and stories, things that happened. Of course, you know, you've got the followers. I think you would start first with the followers of the train camps as the railroads were making their way across the West. You always had the Hell on Wheels groups.
What does that mean?
The little tent cities sitting up along the tracks when they'd have to stop and have a headquarters, and then they'd stop there and work there, and then they'd move on. But these people were the hangers-on, the people who were the gamblers, the shady ladies, the fast buck people.
That's the Hell on Wheels you're talking about.
Hell on Wheels, okay. That's right. That was a good term for them. So they were camp followers, and, you know, in Civil War, they were known as camp followers.
Now, a question there. At the time, they were building toward a town. Wasn't there sometimes a stagecoach that would go between the railhead, wherever
yes.
it was, and that town? That happened,
yes.
right?
Yes, yes, there would be, because the train would only go to a certain point, because they were working on getting it done. Even after the rails were laid, there were stagecoaches still working and still carrying people.
And so a number of people got to El Paso before 1881 by coming as far as they could on rail, and then they got on a stage.
And then they got on a stage. Some people walked.
Oh.
You know, I've read some accounts of one fellow who, you know, he just decided he was going to follow the adventure. And he walked really from the hill country all the way to El Paso.
What'd the Indians do about that?
Oh, they just whooped up on them all the time.
Oh, my goodness.
Victorio made it pretty bad for all of these travelers. So, but the neat thing about it is I wanted to know what types of people, what industries, what did they do, what were their skills. And that I think that's what fascinated me about getting information for this program.
So what was the majority? I mean, was it all gamblers and prostitutes? Or was...
No.
I didn't even
focus on the gamblers and prostitutes. I went to the other side. I looked at people who had skills, who came along, like there were attorneys, of course, legal interest.
Merchants,
you know, bridge builder. People who had the skill to construct.
Carpenters.
Woody, what did you say? Woody?
The business people.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Business
yeah,
and skilled people.
Well, they
right.
were looking for opportunity, and that's where it was down
the
tracks.
And then I said, well, how did they get the word? How did they know this was the place? Well, apparently the word had been going out along Southern Pacific. You know, as they worked along the way, people knew that big plans were being made for this little old El Paso. And the reason it was so important, it connected Mexico, you know, Mexico City up to the border, and it connected the border on up to the rest of the United States for commerce.
And also left to right. I mean, you got east and west going on big time
and
with this.
That's right, in east and west. So it was a huge thing. I mean, I was surprised to find out how many people just knew about it. You know, some of them were just plain adventurers. You know, they wanted to go west and have a good time.
Well, it had to be reported in the newspapers, I'm sure. Hey, the train's got this far going here, and this is. But I want to ask either one of you, Woody. Maybe you know this. When the train companies were able to build across the United States, how were they paid? Weren't they paid in land?
Right. There were, I guess, stipends and grants from the federal government, and also the state of Texas did some of those. New Mexico did some of those, and that encouraged them to build. And they were able to, you know, use the land. They could also sell the land for profits and things like that. It was an incentive to get them going.
With how much land? I mean, like 100 feet on either side or a mile? Or how much land would they get? Any idea?
It would depend on the negotiation that they would do in the part of the country, the railroad.
Okay. But that to me would be their incentive. Plus the commerce, they got to keep the money from the passengers and what a freight they sold passage on, right?
Right.
I mean, that's
right.
That was their business. But the fact that they were being able to invest in the West, so to speak, by getting the land. I mean, the train companies that went through downtown El Paso, did they own a bunch of that land when they rode through here, when they built through here? How'd that work?
No, not initially, but, you know, the Texas and Pacific was given large grants to build to West Texas, and all of those eventually ended up with the university system in Texas, and a lot of those lands ended up being oil rich.
Oh.
So once the Texas and Pacific no longer owned those lands, the university system, you know, made a fortune off of all that.
Did the railroads make any money off of oil and gas?
Some of them did on the leases and things like that. But it wasn't a biggest thing in the 1800s
right.
when they were first building out. It wasn't until the 1920s and on.
And the commerce that came with it, Patricia Kidney, what else did they bring with them?
Well,
businessmen?
Well, the commerce that came with it was all these people on the rail, just first of all, to take care of the people on the railroads. The workers had to be fed. They had to be housed. So somebody, and El Pasoans jumped, that's where all these people came in, somebody had to figure out a way to build the houses. So you had to have lumber, which had to be brought in, okay? You had your meat markets, your grocery stores, your drug stores, mercantiles. Then there was furniture stores, and they were still having horses, so they had the harness shops. And then you had to feed all those horses, so you had the feed, and then you had fuel. And there were just any number of businesses that were popping up to supply these needs. It was incredible. It was like, to me, it was like all these little oil boom towns.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you've got to feed the people working, and then you've got to feed the people who are, I mean, people who are coming in have to be taken care of. And then they felt like this was a good place, so we're going to start bringing our families. You know, so it's really, but the thing I wanted to tell you was many of these accounts that I was reading reported that when they came in late 70s or early 1880s, the houses were one-story adobe. Most of them did not have wood floors. They were dirt floors.
Right.
And so they decided, you know, nobody had a two-story. They didn't have two-story until they had the wood coming in. And somebody came in and started making the bricks from the shale in the mountain over there. That's where that brick company is by Asarco.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, just each little thing led to another little involvement.
And that would include also, so when you have a two-story wooden house or wooden structure, you need a fire department.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
Unlike adobe.
Adobe, yeah.
You know, the lumber first started coming from California, and it was all redwood in 1881. Yes. But you're right about the fire department. It started in 1881 also. And then when the lines opened up in Mexico, they started bringing pine from there.
Is there any house in El Paso that you can finger on who made out of redwood?
Ah.
You know one?
Yes, there is. It's downtown on McGoffin Street, I believe. It was for sale, and I was like, wow.
A redwood?
It was solid redwood throughout.
Oh,
it was amazing.
Oh.
I walked through it. It was
wow.
It was dilapidated at that time, and I think somebody bought it for an office, but it was absolutely amazing. Little gingerbread-style small house.
Kidding. I like
but
to see
all
that.
Redwood.
It'd be great to go see
biggest,
that.
Biggest, giant redwood tree.
We're talking trains coming to El Paso making a huge difference. The trains made a huge difference everywhere. The difference in El Paso was there were so many rail lines that came in. It was incredible. Eight rail lines, you said, in about 15, 20 years.
Right.
Oh, amazing. All right, Woody Bear is here on the phone. Patricia Kidney's with us by phone. We're doing our social distancing, but we're still having a great discussion.
We're keeping them a long ways away.
And we're going to take a break here and come back and talk more trains and what else happened, because quite a bit occurred when the trains hit the fan here in El Paso. And a lot of it was kind of interesting, shady. A lot of it was kind of interesting, good. And we'll see the mix.
And the intersection of the two trains from this trade route right here at the pass. So
it's amazing what happened here. All right, we're going to take a break and come back in a minute. But also, real quick, Mission Del Rey.
Yeah, well, missiondelrey.com. You can go there where you can seek out
the coupon
scavenger hunt for a $20 coupon off your online order. It is going to be easy to find if you go over to the contact page and look for El Paso History Radio
Scroll
Show.
Scroll down to the bottom. Go down to the bottom. Click on that. Yeah. And the first five people who hit that, they'll get $20 off their internet order. You can have it shipped to you and or you could have it picked up there at their location.
Yeah.
That's now legal, apparently.
Don't miss a birthday. There you go.
Yeah, well, they got some interesting stuff on there. I was looking at one of those bedspreads.
Oh,
Western bedspreads.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
I was looking for one for Bernie's cowboy niche. He doesn't have a cowboy cave. He has a cowboy niche.
Oh.
So that's where all of his cowboy stuff is.
Niche? Is that French?
Yes, it's a French. Actually, I call him niche.
Bernie's a French dude, huh? Yeah. Don't tell Bernie. He might be listening. You never know. All right, but we'll take a call or two with this crowd here talking trains here. You have to give them that El Fono number.
915-544-5876 or 915-544-KTSM.
News Radio 690 KTSM.
And now let's turn back the pages of time and return to the El Paso History Show. Brought to you by EPHistory.com. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, 6761 Donovan Drive. By Monterey Asset Management. By Mission Del Rey, 1421 Lee Trevino with El Paso souvenirs and gift shopping. By Keystone Heritage Park on Donovan Drive, 915-584-0563. And by Amigos Restaurant, 2000 Montana, a block east of Cotton, open 7 days a week. Here again, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
Are you ready for next week? We're not ready for today, apparently. But next week, guess what? We got the El Paso County Economic Development Department, I think all two of them. They're going to look to increase their heritage tourism by promoting El Paso's Mission Trail and other authentic historic assets of El Paso County.
Assets. Good thing.
Well, they got nice assets.
Yeah.
But we talked with County Director of Economic Development, Andrea Hutchins, and County Heritage Tourism Coordinator, Valerie Valencia. That's next week on May 2nd. May the 9th, our guest is Ruben Escandon Jr., also known as the spokesperson for Mount Crystal Rey, also known as From This Moment Weddings, the main minister. Line two is ringing, Shelley, the main minister of the weddings. And also, he has a chapel. And he'll also go on location.
Yes.
He goes into prisons and marries people.
Oh, yeah. He's done it on the bridge between El Paso and Mexico.
They've done documentaries on him. I'm not sure when they're coming out.
He's quite the documentary
guy. But
he's
had film crews chase him up on the bridge. And then also, May 16th, this is your fault and Jay Duncan's fault. May 16th, Manos, Hands of Fate, the worst movie ever made in the world,
yes,
was made in El Paso.
El Paso has that fine distinction again of making the worst movie.
Well, we're going to review that movie with Jay Duncan, who also has a list of pandemic movies we can see or forget. I don't know which, but he'll be in on May 16th. May 23rd, BS is back. Mr. Bernie Sargent back to review the many famous people who were buried around El Paso with a focus on Concordia and central El Paso. But also, I want to ask him about cemeteries that are now under buildings in downtown El Paso. There was supposedly a Chinese cemetery somewhere down there, I think. An occasion. Well, it's one of those C is a cemetery. But somewhere under some of those. And occasionally, to dig up a pipe in an alley,
you'll
find a couple of bodies. Like, okay, what's that all about?
Well, actually, we're going to talk about a Memorial Day was coming up on that. We were talking about people that are buried in the cemeteries. There you go.
Actually, they've put them in the right place. May the 30th, we're going to ask a big discussion here. El Paso authors who have books that explain El Paso history. And our guest is Cindy Malazzo. And she and I and you are going to put together a list of authors and discuss them. Cindy will talk about the Texas Western Press people. And if we miss an author, we'll ask you to call in and add another name to the list. There's a whole bunch of people who have written books about El Paso. What do you got?
Well, I wanted to remind everybody, you know, the whole issue's come back up again about the arena downtown, and it's possibly it might get scratched. Keep your fingers crossed. J.P. Bryan's going to be on KVIA TV tonight, and it's going to be at 6:30 p.m. And, of course, J.P. Bryan has been the person that has been the biggest stickler in the side of our mayor in regards to the downtown arena. And he's going to tell his side of the story and why Derenguito is important. And J.P. Bryan is not just somebody off the street. This gentleman has a museum in Galveston.
Oh, it's fabulous. He restored
the hotels. I mean, he is so involved in history. It's amazing.
Well, he's been coming to El Paso looking into the history for 4 decades.
He's done a lot of business here because of his hotel and just being here. He's a businessman. And he does it because he really, really loves history and loves the history that we have.
6:30 tonight on Channel 7.
ABC 7.
ABC
yeah.
7.
But watch it. It'll be very entertaining and very, very informative. I mean, it's a very good
interview. J.P. Bryan on TV. Okay, we got Patricia Kidney on the air here. We got Woody Bear. And also we have a caller named Fran. Fran, we're going to go to you. What's up, Fran?
Yes, I wanted to say that trains, think of the Orient Express.
Yeah.
And my grandfather was a conductor on the train.
Oh, wow. My.
For 30 years in a little town 90 miles east of Amarillo.
Now, wait a minute. The Orient Express didn't go through Amarillo.
True.
90 miles east. It went
That was the yeah. second point.
Okay.
About my family.
Oh, I'm sorry. And Patricia says
and
it was east.
The third point is that when I was 4 years old, I would ride the train from Dallas over to my grandparents' home. And it was about 3.5 hours on the train, and I would get ready, and I would board and have a little ID tag like they do now for the airlines and sit on the aisle. And
by yourself?
I had quite a memory. It was wonderful.
But they sent you off the train on the train by yourself?
4 years old.
Oh, my.
And I asked my mother, I said, thank you so much. Why did you let me go by myself? She said, oh, I thought you were all grown up.
Oh, my.
Well, actually, I was. So.
Good for you. And the Orient Express was another member of the family that did that?
No, that was just the second. That was just the first point.
Okay.
That the trains remind me of the Orient Express, which has spawned novels and movies.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's all. I guess there's many a book about trains in the west of the United States. Got to be. So.
Yes, and so we have so much culture. And also, when I spent some time out in California, in San Francisco, they had a really nice restaurant where people who had contributed to the trains and had their pictures and little history of them.
Was it the Harvey Girls? Harvey House?
May have. Well, no, it was something else. But I know the Harvey House you're speaking of. But it was something else. It was a little restaurant and very quaint, very special.
That's great. You know, trains are a major part of everyone's life, even whether you know it or not. You're probably wearing something or driving something or eating something that came on a train. Good chance. Well, thanks for ringing up, Fran.
Okay.
Good to talk
thanks
to you.
Take care, Fran.
You take her easy. And
thank you.
Patricia, you got a comment on that? What happened to Patricia?
Oh, I'm here. I'm sorry. Oh, I was just going to say there was a line coming down from Kansas City through Texas going down into Mexico. They called that the Orient as well.
Why?
I don't know why that was called.
I think it was because it was of its special cars.
Oh, yeah, the destination was to ship out to the Orient.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay, that would do it.
Yeah, that's why. But my family was grew up along the lines of one of those little towns, Rochester, Texas. And and we, you know, 3 miles from the train track, and they had a little, like a engine, small little engine caboose kind of thing. I'm not sure exactly. I haven't seen pictures.
The doodlebug.
There you go.
Hey, and the doodlebug was the big entertainment for my mother and my dad
really?
And all the family growing up because they went to town.
That's why you had so many children, I guess, huh?
Well, that one of my uncles, actually, he would say when that train went through at 3 o'clock in the morning, wasn't anything to do but reach for Mama.
Oh, Mama. Well, you know, I got to wonder sometimes about people who don't live near train tracks and they move near train tracks. What's that like? What have you ever done that? I mean, all of a sudden you hear these whistles.
I lived real close to the track here in the Upper Valley for a short time.
Yes.
Yeah. Coming from California, I thought that we were having an earthquake one day when I was sitting in the house.
It was just a rumble of the train?
It was the rumbling of the train because of the water table. It just made the house move and it rumbled. I was like,
yeah, but what
it's a train.
What about that whistle in the middle of nowhere?
I still hear it at our house where we're at now. And it's like, okay. Yeah, I'm glad I'm not as close anymore.
Patricia, you're not near train tracks, are you?
No, but I do in the middle of the night, about 3:30 in the morning, in the still of the night, up on the hill close to Eastwood High School. It seems like a train must be going through somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
Because I hear one, and I can hear, you know, down by the tracks, by the alfalfa yards.
How about you, Woody? You live near train tracks?
Yeah, I live in the Upper Valley, so I hear the trains in Santa Teresa and also the ones on Doniphan.
Yeah.
But I grew up in Northeast, and so I was used to the trains up and down railroad.
Oh yeah.
It's
so
amazing.
You just totally, you know, are oblivious to the sandwich.
And that's what happens to you. Okay. I've never lived really close to train tracks. I just wondered. Fair enough. We're going to take a break here. We're going to talk trains when we come back on more trains. And it's an interesting thing because, again, El Paso is an incredibly historic town. Trains are a major part of it. They really are. Patricia Kidney here, Woody Bear. And Melissa, you're still here.
I'm still here, I'm on Facebook. So I've got – I do want to make a mention real quick. On Facebook, I've put up the Railroad Model Train Association's Facebook page along with a video of a model train. So just something a little entertaining and different.
You know, you can put a camera in a little model train now.
Ah,
I want to see one of those.
Cool.
And I want to thank the control room.
Run into the cat.
Shelley Sutherland taking your calls. And Mike Rivera, the man of the day. How is it going in there, Mike? I didn't hear you.
That's going great.
He's
having fun.
He can actually talk in there.
Yes.
He's not a bell anymore.
He's not singing.
Oh, but that'll be
he was singing. He's got a good voice.
Well, we'll keep that for another day. Shall we take a break here?
Yes, we shall.
Call us up if you think you need to.
Call us at El Paso. Call us. I don't know where
call
I'm calling.
Somebody.
Where am I?
Pick a number.
915-544-5876 or 915-544-KTSM.
And now let's turn back the pages of time and return to the El Paso History Show. Brought to you by EPHistory.com. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, 6761 Doniphan Drive, by Monterey Asset Management, by Mission Del Rey, 1421 Lee Trevino with El Paso souvenirs and gift shopping, by Keystone Heritage Park on Doniphan Drive, 915-584-0563, and by Amigos Restaurant, 2000 Montana, a block east of Cotton, open 7 days a week. Here again, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
Got the phones ringing. We got stuff to do here, and we're going to tell you right now what's happening this week only in El Paso, Inc.
Up.
Oh, you don't have that piece of paper out?
I was looking at Facebook, our Facebook page.
Only in El Paso, Inc. Go.
As El Paso sees a glimmer of hope in the slowing of the growth rate of COVID-19, city and business leaders are coming together to figure out what comes next and what it'll take to rebuild El Paso's economy.
Also in the ink, why federal aid for cities will likely not patch El Paso's huge budget gaps.
A child care dilemma, how COVID-19 closures have left parents scrambling.
Celebrating its 25th year, El Paso Inc. is available for home or business delivery.
To order your copy of El Paso Inc., go online to elpasoinc.com.
A local group wants the city of El Paso to reopen for business.
Yeah.
That's the topic of ABC 7 Extra Sunday night. Is it too soon, given that COVID-19 cases continue to rise?
Saul Sainz asked the experts on ABC 7 Extra Sunday nights at 10:35 p.m.
We got a caller on the line. We got some people to talk to. We also have Patricia Kidney here and Woody Bear. Woody, what was the biggest deal to you about the trains coming in? Well, I mean, it was a huge impact, obviously. How would you characterize it?
Well, it's all of the businesses and types of people that came in. You know, the State National, the First National were here in 1881. The El Paso Times, the Herald Post in 81.
Yeah.
The Central Hotel was remodeled in 1881 because of the influx of people that were coming in. The Pearson Hotel was built, the Parker House, schools started, churches started building. You know, it was just a total infrastructure. When the Chinese didn't have railroad jobs anymore, after, you know, the completion of the southern link of the railroad, they came back to El Paso and started restaurants
laundries.
You know, laundries and stuff like that. They say that some of the finer restaurants back then were Chinese owned.
Oh, I bet.
So I mean, there was quite a different change in lifestyle when the railroads came in.
And Patricia, when did the Harvey House girls show up?
1906.
So it took a while for that to develop. So between 1881 and 1906, the railroad passengers were eating whatever they could bring with them?
Yes, little old box lunches.
Oh.
And that would kind of turn rancid between stops, until they could get. Then they'd have something at a little taco stand. They'd jump off and get something when they stopped for water along the way. And that was pretty bad.
Yeah.
Food was bad.
But
they'd pay, and then they wouldn't get their food.
Oh, but El Paso was a biggie when it came to connecting between places. Even when the airlines showed up, El Paso was a major connection point. But back in the train day, this was huge, and that's why a bunch of the hotels showed up, right?
Yes, of course.
Right.
interesting history here. We got some interesting history from San Elizario. His name is George Sanchez. Hey, George, what's up?
Oh, okay, I'm enjoying the program about the railroad, but I've got a railroad story to tell you.
Okay.
Real quick.
You've only got 30 seconds, but in 2 minutes. Go ahead.
All righty. My dad, Abe Sanchez, worked for 36 years for the Southern Pacific in Carrizozo, New Mexico. Do you know where that is? It's between Tularoso and Corona.
Yes, up the street there.
Yes, okay. He worked 36 years. And this other lady that called in, I think her name was Fran, her father, I believe she said, worked for the railroad, and they could travel. And we used to, as a family, we could travel for free all the way from Carrizozo to California. We went a couple, two or three times when my dad was working for the railroad.
Oh, that's neat.
The story that I wanted to tell you was, when I was around 12 or 13, I believe I was in the 7th grade, my dad let me and a friend of mine come to El Paso from Carrizozo, and he put us on the engine, and we came to El Paso, and the reason we came, we wanted to go to the theater, the Plaza Theater.
Oh, cool.
Now, what I wanted to mention to, Rocky Bear, was that...
Woody.
If I remember...
Mr. Woody to you, Woody Bear.
Oh, yes. Woody Bear. What I wanted to mention was, if I remember correctly, when we got to the depot here in El Paso, in the bathroom or in the water fountain, there was a sign there that said something like whites only.
It said no colored allowed, I think is what it said.
I don't remember exactly what it said, but I remember, thinking back, I remember seeing a sign like that.
Oh, yeah, racism continued for a long time around the South. I remember seeing that it was on the transom window, and they had blotted it out, but you could still read it. I remember seeing that about 15 years ago. I think they took it down finally. Oh, yeah.
No, you can still see where the lettering was painted on.
It's still there.
They scratched it off. You can, because the lettering is darker.
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah,
A
certain way the light is, you can look at it.
So sometimes we learn and sometimes we don't, but some of the history lingers.
Yeah.
It lingers.
Sure.
I thought I could remember something like that, so I thought I would mention that. Anyway, say hello to the shady lady for me.
Indeed. And today she's not as shady as she can be. I got news for you. She's a train lady. George, thanks for ringing up. You take her easy.
Thank you, George.
All right.
Bye, George.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks
Bye.
A lot. Now, Patricia, you did have a few shady ladies show up with the gamblers, no?
Well, of course. And we had the big five madams come in. And to name them, we had Alice Abbott.
Oh, my.
Gypsy Davenport, May Palmer, Tilly Howard, and Etta Clark.
We talking Utah Street here?
Yes.
Ah.
Now Mesa Street.
Now Mesa, yeah. Who came in and changed it to Mesa Street?
Don't know.
Oh, that was done during that period where they were trying to clean up the image of downtown El Paso, and they changed the street because it had been referred to Utah Street. Always thought of everybody with prostitutes. They wanted to make it a proper street. So
and
it's
Mesa Street. It was Utah because that street went to Utah.
The direction was north.
However,
northwest.
It was also went to the Mesa, so that was cool.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, Woody, there's a lot of train business we're not going to get to today. I mean, like the line to Carrizozo these people were talking about, it also went over to Lincoln, didn't it?
Right. It went to the Plowcroft branch, the Capitan branch. It eventually went up to Dawson, New Mexico. So there's just a lot of history from El Paso.
And there's another whole set of discussions we need to have in the near future on the air about trains that would follow the copper. They went everywhere.
Exactly.
Oh, copper was king, and so were the trains. Trains chased copper.
Arizona, New Mexico. El Paso actually built its own line to carry the copper because they didn't want to pay the prices from the Southern Pacific and the Santa Fe Railroad.
And also
El Paso and Southwestern Railroad.
Where was this copper going? To smelters in El Paso?
It was coming to smelters and refineries here in El Paso.
You had the federal smelter there, but it became Memorial Park. If you want to know why there was that much of a big park sitting there, that used to be a smelter. Don't dig very deep if you're going to go plant flowers in that park. Don't do it. And the same with the Sarco. Sarco was pretty well situated. It was interesting. They had two train lines to choose from, so they didn't have to have a monopoly train event. But also they had the Rio Grande right there. They had everything they needed to make a smelter occur. And didn't they own stuff down in Mexico?
That's where all of their raw copper came from, was from Mexico, and they refined it here.
That's another story another day. Taking one last break here for the show here. When we come back, both of you summarize what you think happened when the trains hit the fan in 1881. And it was huge. And that's why I think we look at this history as we do. Taking a break here, call us if you need to. Or Facebook, what have you done on Facebook?
On Facebook, I put up the video of the model train. And I'm also just now putting together a bunch of pictures I'm going to put up from the Model Railroad Club's building down on Vaughn Street.
Do they have any videos from a train perspective? Put a little GoCam thing in.
I don't know.
You guys got to do that. One more thing as we go to break. There is a free teaching material now from the Tom Lee Institute. They are doing things during this stay-at-home business. They have K-12 El Paso history from Tom Lee. And you can go 533-0048. And pick up the curriculum and see what they're talking about. Because they'll help you teach your kids El Paso history through the eyes of Tom Lee. Such a deal there, huh?
There you go.
Call us if you need to.
915-544-5876 or 915-544-KTSM.
Here again, El Paso history with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
We got Raul on hold and somebody else is calling in here. We'll get to Patricia Kidney as well as Woody Bear about stuff. Real quick, Pepe's. 877-2152. Call them up. Get some to eat. Go pick it up.
And Amigos, don't forget them down on 2000 Montana. Their phone number is 533-0155. And we must not forget Mission Del Rey Southwest merchandise $20 coupon. If you find it on their scavenger hunt, which is on the contact page, check for the El Paso History Radio Show. And there they are waiting for you.
It's not hidden on that page.
Give us
it's
a call.
Contact page down at the bottom. Get your coupon. No, they might have taken them all. I have no idea. Anyway,
only five.
Talking what's happening here in the history, we got time to talk to Raul. We sure do. Raul, you're on the radio. What's up?
Good morning, guys. How's you guys doing?
Doing fine, and
surviving
you?
Surviving nicely. Go ahead.
Yeah, fine, thank you. My paternal grandfather was a railroad man in the Mexican Railroad, and as a matter of fact, he lost a leg as a result of helping somebody who was trying to jump the train who got dragged. Underneath the train, started to get dragged underneath the train, and he helped him, and he ended up losing a leg as a result.
Yeah, you don't beat a train.
Yeah, a couple of things. Do you guys remember this business that used to sell train parts there, right on Montana, not too far from Cotton?
What do you mean train parts?
Oh, like a hobby store.
Little train, train stuff, model train stuff. And they
hobby
had
shop.
A little model track and everything. It was really a cool place. I remember it as a kid.
I remember that had a big, big window. Another one was on Polk Street. I remember that one easily.
There was one on the east side.
Woody's Train Shop, and that was an interesting one.
Yeah, he was over on the east side finally, wasn't he?
I don't know. Anyway, trains, they're out there. I think you go to House Hobby Shop now, you can buy some trains. I don't know.
Yeah, I'd like to recommend a great historical documentary that people might be able to see if they have Prime Video, and it's the history of New York. It was done by Rick Burns, and it's an 8-part series, it is fascinating. And it makes it seem like New York City, in many ways, was the most historical city in the United States.
New York City, just about. Get a rope. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead. It just came to me.
Yeah, but just sad what's going on there. I mean, they've been through so many things historically, and now they're going through another era. One of my favorite writers, Thomas Friedman, a columnist for the New York Times, has characterized our era as, if you remember the old days, it was B.C., A.D., before Christ, and then after Christ. Now he's saying this is B.C. before coronavirus and A.C. after coronavirus, and stamp with that from here on out.
All right, Raul, thanks for sharing. You take her easy.
Take care, Raul. Keep listening.
Thanks a lot. All right, Patricia, you got a summary of the trains. We got Corbin on hold. We'll see if we can get to Corbin in a minute, but go ahead, Patricia.
Well, I think what I wanted to say was that all of these people who came in the early 80s had a vision. They didn't just come to earn a living, but they wanted to be part on the ground floor of this, making El Paso and this little pass area something great, and they all worked toward cleaning up the negative element.
Yes.
But they all seemed to work together. They joined groups, and it was just, in researching it, I was left with an inspired feeling about the early founders of El Paso.
A great time to be here, I would think, but a lot of work and a lot of rewards.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting time.
Yes.
Very good. All right, let's ask Woody, what are your thoughts on summarizing the trains showing up here?
Well, it was amazing because you had so many different
types of people, nationalities, and things. And we were truly a universal type of city with all the different people and businesses that ended up here.
A lot of Middle Eastern.
We continue that today.
A lot of Middle Eastern people came on the train, and they looked around when they got off to take a break and said, this looks like home. So they stayed here. That's what some of them have told me. Interesting thing here. One more call here. Let's talk to Corbin. Got you on the radio. What's up, Corbin?
Good afternoon, everybody. Enjoy your program.
Thank you.
I listen to it every Saturday.
Thank you.
I don't have a lot of history with trains, but you talked about Hell on Wheels.
Ah.
And there is a program on Netflix that I've watched.
Oh.
And it's called Hell on Wheels. And it depicts the little communities that fell or followed the train industry throughout the Southwest and I guess it's the Midwest.
Oh, yeah.
But it'd be great for your listeners to look that up on Netflix.
Fair enough. Well, thanks for the notice.
It shows a lot of stuff.
Hell on Wheels.
A real quick shout-out to the El Paso Archaeological Society.
Yes.
I are more involved with the archaeological aspect of El Paso and the Southwest than trains, but we appreciate the museum there on Trans Mountain and the Poppies and
absolutely.
You guys. And I just wanted to tell you thank you for all the info and the history that you give.
Don't forget EPAS.com. Go there and talk to them. Thanks a lot. You take care.
You bet. Have a great day.
We'll bye-bye.
See you on the radio, as we say. All right, we're about out of here. Patricia, thanks for joining us. Woody
You're
Bear,
welcome.
Appreciate you being a train guy. We'll get together and talk about Freeport Mac Moran when that shows up again. We thank them for what they do. Everybody.
Thank you.
Melissa, we're
Take
gone.
Take care. Yes, we are.
Shelly, thank you for call screening.
Oh.
Who's that guy in the control room?
Michael
Rivera.
Rivera.
Thank you, guys. See you next week on
Take
the
care.
El Paso History Radio Show. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the El Paso History Show. We hope you'll join us again next Saturday morning, 10 to noon, and be sure to tell a friend about us. Brought to you by Patrick Tuttle Legacy Real Estate Services, 915-585-7777. And by Amigos Restaurant, 2000 Montana, a block east of Cotton, open 7 days a week with great Mexican food. By Keystone Heritage Park on Donovan Drive, 915-584-0563. By Monterey Asset Management. And by Mission Del Rey, 1421 Lee Trevino, with El Paso souvenirs and gift shopping. Thank you for joining us from the studios of News Radio 690 KTSM AM El Paso.